Risky business. Let's talk to the pros. Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? It's me, Joey P, Joe Pizzapia, and welcome to Fantasy Pros, the home of fantasy sports. And we've got a great guest for you today. It's the one, the only Mike Kurland. I am so excited to talk to Mike, because Mike is one of my new favorite people in the fantasy baseball industry. He just is. We spent some quality time on Justin Mason's Potapalooza the other day, and we've got him here for a fun hour or so of Major League Baseball fantasy baseball chatter. We're going to talk to Mike about the riskiest picks in the top 150 ADP on Fantasy Pros, the guys you're going to take in the early rounds that actually have more risk than you realize. And look, some of them are good risk, but you have to acknowledge the risk, and some of them are bad risk, and you have to stay away from that. We're going to tell you which is which, because we're smart and handsome and all of the above. We're also going to do a little mailbag, answer your questions, because this is the people's program, and we're also going to play a little game, a little what's trending, things that are going on Twitter right now that we're going to bring in here and discuss from a fantasy standpoint, or even a real life standpoint. We'll see where it goes, but first, let's bring in our guest. You can follow him on Twitter at @Mike_Kurland. He is the host of the Bases Loaded Pod, a contributor to RotoBaller MLB, Prospects Live. He's also 2019 FSWA Award finalist. He is the one, the only Mike Kurland. Mikey, welcome to the program, my friend. I am so happy to have you today.
Man, I always get these really good intros. I'm so happy to be here. And I realize I have something to work on as a host myself these days. I always appreciate it. And honestly, man, this is one of those bucket lists. Like, oh man, this is one of those podcasts I've listened to for a long time. Just happy to be a part of it. I'm appreciative of the opportunity.
Is this your first time here on Fantasy Pros?
On Fantasy Pros, yes. Yes,
oh,
it is.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I promise you, I will be gentle. I will be gentle with you. Look, we're going to
That's
have
no
great
fun.
Oh, okay, I'll be rough with you.
It's there it is.
Great, man. I can't believe that, and I think that's been so great, too, in the last few weeks. They've kind of given Joey P the reins and said, hey, go find us some people and bring them on the show that you like to talk to. And I always love people that have great information coupled with a good sense of humor and a lot of passion. And I feel like you're one of those people too. And that's why I'm excited to have you on the show today. And before we jump into things, I want to remind everybody too, if you're looking for passionate fantasy baseball talk, then next Friday, we have a special event. And I love special events. Special event, Fantasy Baseball Fest, is going to be happening right here on Fantasy Pros. It's going to be Dan Harris and myself hosting for 4 glorious hours. Oh my God, it's going to be amazing. Okay, so here's what it's going to be. Fantasy Baseball Fest on March 12th. Okay, it's the Friday afternoon, starting at noon Eastern to 4 Eastern. And this is how you get into it. Okay, you're going to go to youtube.com/fantasypros MLB. Again, that's our YouTube channel just for baseball. Don't get confused. I know it's a Fantasy Pros channel already. This is just for baseball. That way we, you know, don't upset, you know, Tagliere, and we don't upset Yates with all of the baseball talk. So Fantasy Pros MLB is the channel on YouTube. You go and you subscribe, you click the link there, you get the notifications, and then you can watch the live stream. We're going to have Nick Pollock and Alex Fast debating pitchers. We're going to have Eric Cross talking prospects. We're going to have Ariel Cohen. We're going to have Bogman and Welsh doing draft strategy. We've got a whole list of great people. Casey Bubba, who's going to be on the show next week too. It's going to be awesome, so get involved with it. Again, it's Fantasy Pros MLB is the YouTube channel, so subscribe, get the notifications, come be a part of it. It's going to be amazing. We're going to have so much fun. 4 hours of Dan Harris and myself. How could you say no to that? I mean, that's just crazy. All right, and also want to throw this out there. Everybody knows I'm the president of the Juan Soto Fan Club, and at Fantasy Pros, we are giving away, yes, giving away, an autographed Juan Soto jersey. So if you go to fantasypros.com/MLB contest, thanks to our friends at pristineauction.com, they have set this up. Again, you got to go get involved with Pristine Auction. Great group over there. This is a great contest going on. So what you do is you go hit the site up and you go to Apple Podcasts or CastBox. You write a review of the podcast. You take a screenshot. You go back over there to the link, you fill out this little tiny short form, you upload the screenshot, and boom, bang, pow, you're entered for the Juan Soto giveaway, and that's very exciting. I can't be a part of it because I work for Pros, and I'm mad about this because, as I said, I'm president of the fan club, but go to fantasypros.com/MLB contest to get that Juan Soto jersey.
You got to get that lottery ticket, baby. You got to do it. So lots of fun stuff happening right now. And obviously we've got all the tools to get you ready for the draft too. So many great things. We got the draft wizard, the draft simulator. You got the multi-user situation too, where you can go in there with your friends and mock draft the mud, as we call it here behind the scenes. It's very cool. We've got some great stuff happening at Fantasy Pros to get you ready for your baseball season, but nothing is better than talking baseball. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. We're going to go through back and forth our little countdown here, starting at 10. And we've kind of ranked these guys in the top 150 of guys that we think have risk that you need to be aware of, the reasons why. It might not mean that you shouldn't draft them. It just means that these are guys that you have to understand there might be a little bit more to that. Maybe it's not as simple as things are laid out in terms of ADP, which, of course, you can get on Fantasy Pros along with the ECR and all of the fun three-letter words. So, let's start with you, Mike. Who is your number 10 in the top 150 in terms of risk that you want to talk about today?
I always feel like I'm going to get heat for this one because it's such a big name, but we're starting right at the top of ADP essentially. And Walker Buehler's a guy that I'm not out on, but I'm out at this price because at his ADP of 19.2, according to Fantasy Pros, he's ahead of guys that I just trust to pitch more innings this year. And with similar enough production, I do think Buehler has the stuff to be ultimately one of the best, if not the best pitcher in baseball, which some of these other guys might not have in Lucas Giolito going behind him, Aaron Nola. Those are the two that really I tend to favor over Buehler. Mm-hmm. But, and even honestly, I'm pretty high on Luis Castillo, who's way down in comparison about 10 or so picks later. Those are three guys I actually take over Buehler. A lot of it is I believe in their innings more than Buehler. The Dodgers are going to be the Dodgers. There's already talks of the Dodgers bringing six or seven into the season now because we have the alt sites and all that. So there's a delay in AAA, which allows probably rosters to open up again like we saw last year. Right. And if that's the case, they were talking about bringing seven or so starters to the table to start the season. Pair that with Buehler not only getting the occasional day off because it's the Dodgers, but then they also have Buehler has himself mentioned that he's a slow starter. Mm-hmm. So that's just in a season that we're coming off where we don't know what type of innings we're going to get. And there's already all those questions in terms of the Dodgers being the Dodgers. I want the other guys I mentioned because I believe in their teams letting them go a little more, them getting more innings with production that could be better, but we know the floors are at least the same or close enough to. Buehler does have that ceiling, but there's just enough question marks there for me to just knock him down a peg. Personally,
I think what's so interesting about this, and again, it's not an ADP thing, but the way you discuss it and bring up the points, it makes me think about the auction value, right? If you can get Luis Castillo, who you mentioned is probably going to go a little less and a little later and probably for a little less, right? Both of those things, then that's an interesting pivot. And it's something you should consider and think about. I love Walker Buehler. And it's funny. I saw this name and I immediately wanted to give you heat. And at the same time, I kind of agree with what you're saying. I think there is I do. I think there's a separation. The guys you mentioned that you like above him, you know, like Giolito, for instance, I think you're onto something there. I think there's a bigger strikeout total potentially there for Giolito too. And you bring up a lot of great points that, once again, it's not that you don't want Walker Buehler on your team. It's not that I don't want Walker Buehler on my team, but there is a little bit of risk there that I think you have to be aware of. My number 10 is at ADP 49 overall on Fantasy Pros. And it's actually a guy I just drafted DGFBI a few days ago. And I've got him a few other places too. And I recognize the risk. But for me, this is a player that can win you a league where you're drafting him. And it's going to be Aaron Judge. And I am completely understanding of the risk that involves here with the injuries. I'm also understand that he's a streaky player. And there's times where he can go a little quiet. But that's most sluggers. So what I'm most encouraged by is that he changed the workout regimen this offseason. A lot less weight training, a lot more kind of strength and flexibility training, which I think is a good thing. I think some of these guys are getting a little too bulky, a little too big, and baseball is a very different kind of game. I miss those days where you had the baseball body guys, you know, the guys who would like smoke in the dugout in between innings. You know, they go work at Ace Hardware in the offseason, you know, when they weren't playing baseball. And it's funny, like they didn't get hurt as much. And I think that they train so hard, these guys, that sometimes they're just putting so much stress on their body. And then they're doing baseball activities, which are kind of different than workout activities. So I'm cautiously optimistic for Judge. Around 50, there's still risk. I just want everybody to be aware that this could go south yet again. We always want to look at the sunny side of situations, and that's not always the case. Now, I'm investing in this risk. I think you should too, but don't ignore it and think that everything is fine because you can't. And you have to back it up later by taking some extra outfielders for your bench that you can believe in that can start just in case you do miss a month of Aaron Judge. Who is your number nine here on your list, Mike?
This one hurts because I was really high on. I was really high on this player coming into the season. I still am very high. And this, again, this is more of a just be aware of something. And there's others around him that I value similarly. So that's why the 80, that's why this is like a, this is still a very, very, very small risk. But Xander Bogaerts, he recently popped up with a shoulder injury, had an MRI, came back negative. But anytime anybody needs an MRI, it just scares me a little bit. And then there's the potential for re-injury or re-aggravation of the injury, I should say. Mm-hmm. And there's a chance that he misses time into the season. Now, it sounds like he should be getting some reps here shortly, but it's still unknown. And again, there's that chance for setback. So as of right now, I'm cautiously pessimistic. Like, I don't, trust me, this, the second that I hear good news on Bogaerts, he's off this list. But until then, I've learned to be very cautious in that approach, because now you're talking about guys like Corey Seager in that range, where I like, I actually, honestly, I was so high on Bogaerts, I liked him more than Bo Bichette, which a lot of people wouldn't do that. I was that high on Bogaerts. So maybe for me now, maybe I'm closer to ADP now is what it is. So, I just want to really acknowledge that there's that risk of, we don't know the significance of his injury. MRI came back clean, but it's baseball. He has to use that arm to throw. They have JD Martinez that they rather use at DH. So I don't think they want to give him, you know, put him in at the DH. So Bogaerts is just a guy that, it's all about the timetable of his injury. It's all about how he progresses through recovery. And right now, you got to put that into your analysis a little bit. And again, now he goes from, for me, being a second surefire second rounder. It's like the early parts of the third, maybe middle of the third, because I'm not quite that scared off yet, but enough to knock him down. Again, in my ranks, a guy who's just really probably too high on him, or was a little too high on him.
You know, it's tough because I'm a big Xander fan too, but, you know, we're going to deal with injuries during the season. And I think, and I've talked to Bogman about this too on many podcasts, he's somebody who is really adverse to taking anybody who's hurt in spring training on his team because he feels like he's already setting himself up for failure. Do you feel a little of that too? Like, once you get this news, or like, I understand it's spring training and sometimes guys are just being cautious, but at the same time, is that like part of this equation for you? Is like, you just don't want to get off to the wrong foot because you know it's going to be such a war of attrition as you go anyway.
Yeah, and then you add in, you know, COVID is still around. It's still a thing. We're still seeing players dealing with it. Franchi hasn't reported to camp because of it, his teammate. So you have, like, that's just – and my thing is the need for an MRI. Anytime someone needs an MRI, like, you don't just get MRI. It's not like Oprah, you get one, you get one. They don't do that with MRIs, you know?
I don't know. I did see that one show where she was giving them out. It got weird.
Yeah.
And it was a weird long line, but whatever.
Yeah, but in all seriousness, though, it's that's what it is. So it's like when you need an MRI, it just suggests that – they thought it could have been that serious, you know, because a couple guys just need a day off. Like, you don't hear, I'm trying to think, Juan Soto just had a couple days off because he got a foul tip off his foot or whatever. You didn't hear about him getting testing for it, though. It was just a couple days off. Yeah, well,
he's not human.
Yes, I get it. I mean, we already have the machines. We got Cyborg does work for Soto.
I like, maybe there he goes. Cyborg.
Cyborg is a good nickname, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is that the need for an MRI really scares me. And again, you mentioned a long season. If he's coming into the season, if he's coming into this longer, elongated season, coming off, you know, a shortened season, and that injury's already there, could it creep back in shortly into it? If he rushes back, enough questions that just a little bit. There's a little. That's like a 2 out of 10. That's why he's so low on my list here. I don't mean to ramble, but Bogaerts is just a guy that I feel passionately for.
Yeah, well, I do too. You should. He's got 3 straight years of .500 slugging percentage. You want a little trivia? Bring a little trivia here for you. There are only 3 other shortstops who have 4 or more seasons of .500 slugging. Don't go looking at your computer. I'll give you hints.
Well, I'm looking at the list. Yeah, I'm looking at the list. Yeah. Okay, I can't show you my screen, but to the right is the ADP, just so I can be prepared. Like a true professional.
No, this is like in the history of baseball we're talking.
Oh, never mind.
History of baseball. So, you know, no Googling, no looking. So think about the great power-hitting shortstops of all time. And I'll give you a hint. One of them actually played for the Red Sox, who's on this 3 list, who have done it 4 times. The other one is in the Hall of Fame, obviously, and the other one is also has the longest drug suspension ever in Major League Baseball history.
Well, I'm not gonna lie, I am terrible at trivia on the spot,
It's okay. I will give you the answer. So Nomar Garcia-Para is one of them. He had 4. Then Alex Rodriguez had a bunch, obviously.
That's who I was going to, that was the only one I would have gotten, I promise.
Well, I did give you the whole, you know, drug suspension thing.
Yeah.
And then the other one was not from your time or mine. It was Ernie Banks, another, you know, Hall of Fame all time.
Wouldn't have guessed that one.
No, but I mean, but think about that. Think about that. Only three guys have ever had four seasons of 500 slugging. If Xander can do that, that's some incredible company for Xander Bogaerts to even be mentioned in.
He's underappreciated. He really is.
Underappreciated. You know what? He was one of these guys that came on like gangbusters, settled in, was a little underwhelming in the sophomore season, and then people kind of went past him to Devers, went past him to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And they kind of have just coming back, I feel like, and realizing, wow, Xander Bogaerts has been really good the last few years. But you're right, the MRI is a risk. There's also a lot of risk in this shortstop. It's Javier Baez because, look, I've never been a big Baez guy, but when he's hitting for big power, I understand why people want to go that route. You're always worried about the batting average. You're always worried about a certain degree of swing and miss. And I think there's just a rosy picture being painted right now where, you know, players who did have down seasons or maybe a downward trajectory last year, we want to throw it out completely, which I don't want to throw out completely with certain players. Baez is one of them because he has a history of this kind of stuff. So for me, I just want to throw that out there. His current ADP on Fantasy Pros is 71. Baez is a player for me at number 9 that I just feel like you have to understand there's a lot of downside. Yeah, the power's an upside. Yeah, you're probably getting, you know, some decent counting stats there as well. But I don't have him as far away from guys as like, you know, Carlos Correa or Marcus Semien. It's such a deep position shortstop. I don't know why you'd reach for Javier Baez. I think that's more than anything. I mean, heck, even late taking a shot on Didi Gregorius, it's going to give you a better batting average probably. He's going to give you 20 home runs instead of maybe the 25 that Baez is going to give you or something like that. I just think that in his place right now, it's a little rich for me and there's a little bit of risk. So that's kind of how I feel on that one. Who is your number 8 on your list, Mike?
Number 8 on my list is something I think you'll appreciate this because I just listened to your most recent show. Again, kissing butt. I can't help myself.
That's all right. But I love it. I got 2 kids.
I got 3.
You hear nice things. There you go. So like, it's nice. I've called you fun and smart. It's a mutual love fest here. This is nice.
Yes.
It's a positivity show today.
Yes, I'll take it because I don't hear those things often. So thank you. But in all seriousness, it's a catcher. It's Sal Perez, and I actually really like Sal Perez. I just really don't like the ADP. He's going that's all it is. It's because Sal Perez actually did some good things last year. He actually reduced his launch angle, which a lot of people are like, "Wait, how's that good?" Well, for a player like him, it helped get him like more line drives, and with more line drives come a higher batting average more than likely. He also didn't pull as heavy. He was still pretty pull heavy, but he also put the ball up the middle a lot as well. So attacking two parts of the field versus being so heavily favored on one, again, will help BABIP, will help batting average. So some of the batting average growth we saw even in a shortened season, I think he could sustain some of it. I'm not saying all of it, but if he got back to being a 260 hitter compared to like a 230 hitter we've seen in the past, I think we can get a solid 260 and 25, which is great from a catcher. Great. The hard hit data, it's all legit, man. The hard hit stuff, he crushes the ball. And he's going to hit in the middle of an underrated lineup as well. So Perez, again, I love Perez. But I just can't justify taking a guy that, I mean, sure, he could stand out at catcher. But unless it's a two-catcher league, and even then, I struggle to take him inside the top 100 because I just believe that there's similar enough production later on at catcher. That it's like I just can't get behind Sal Perez being so early of a pick because you're passing up on such good talent around him. That's really what comes down to for me.
Well, and you're always running the risk of catcher being a higher injury prone position.
Yep.
You're running the risk of the fact that they also don't play every day. I mean, I'm with you, man. I catchers and two catcher leagues being the standard. I just want to just jump off a tall building. I hate it so much.
It's like two tight end leagues.
That's another thing. It's like, hey, let's take the worst thing and make it way more important than it ever should be. What? Like, there's some NFL teams, like you said, that don't even use a tight end. I barely remember this year, and I'm a Patriots fan, them having one on the roster. It was crazy, right? And it's like,
you didn't have a quarterback either, though.
So. That's fair enough. But seriously, I don't get why we do this to ourselves. And it's one thing when we had Mike Piazza and Javi Lopez and those guys, they're not around anymore, guys. I want to just be like, bro, stop this industry standard. My rear end enough is enough. I'm over it. All right. My number 8 is Luke Voit. Had a great season last year. Oh my God. Power galore. He's ADP number 57. And I like Luke Voit, and first base isn't great. I just think what we're doing now is that dangerous thing. And you've seen it. And I know it's extrapolation nation. You take that great hot run and it was so great. And you didn't have the whole, you know, extra 100 games to play last year where there was the downside. So you want to take the 20 home runs you see over 60 games and make them 50 home runs. And he just like, no, Just don't do that. That is a very dangerous game to play. And I think that's the risk there with Voight, is just the lazy extrapolation, which does not account, importantly enough, for the down periods, because we all have them. Because that's what baseball is, and all these players will go through these ebbs and flows. So as great as a player can look for 2 months, is as bad as they can look another 2 months. Just look at, like, for instance, the 2 months 2 years ago of, like, 2018, where Christian Yelich had 22 home runs to finish the season in 2 months, and then last year's 2 months, okay? Just take a look at those two and just understand that there's something in the middle there. And it's not that I don't like Voight. It's just I think there's some options at first base, and I don't think he's a separator at that ADP. So it's a simple one for me. Number seven is a guy that you've got on your list, I see, and I've got two, so it must be true.
Yes, it is another Yankee, which is scary because that's three Yankees on this list between the two of us. Yeah. And real quick about Voight, I wanted to mention that there's a chance that not only the injury history, he dealt with an injury late last year they played through in the playoffs. He obviously came off the injury in 2019 as well. So yeah, there's a lot of injury risk there, as well as the fact that if you look at what is currently, and I'm holding my breath here, a healthy Yankees lineup, where does he sit? Sixth, seventh?
Probably sixth.
Because right now you have LeMahieu, Aaron Judge. They've already come out and said that Hicks is batting third. Then you have what? Gleyber Torres and our next guy on this list and Giancarlo Stanton. Those guys are going to probably bat 4 or 5. Roughly. Probably. So Voight probably six.
6-7, yeah.
And then Gary Sanchez is sitting there. Clint Frazier's sitting there. Urshela's there. There's, you see what I'm getting at? Voight could fall. If he doesn't produce right away, he could also fall. I like Voight. I'm with you. But there, again, we're talking risk. I wanted to bring that up. But Stanton is the guy. You said he's on your list as well. What does there say? He could win your league. If you're in the roto, he can literally carry you in home runs. He can play 120 games and still hit 30 bombs. But when's the last, I just don't trust him to hold up. And they talked about playing him in the outfield. Now I really don't believe he's going to stay healthy for a full year. Like he can't even stand in the batter's box. He can't run the bases. Like, he got hurt running the bases last year, I remember, in 2020. So you're telling me a guy who had trouble running,
thinking about running the bases.
Yeah. You're going to tell me a guy in Stanton who got hurt running the bases is going to be in the outfield playing on occasion. Like, that's just added risk. And I love the idea of Stanton. I'm a Marlins fan. Can't get enough of Stanton. I mean, I was there. I watched it. Dude, when he hits the ball, it just sounds different. It's
100%.
He's exactly a special talent. The problem is I don't trust the talent to be on the field enough. And that's all it is with me. It's like, if he stays healthy, I will be wrong. And if it's a shallower format, I will actually go out of I'll get a share or two. And in shallower formats where I know the replacement level, like you're going to get good replacement level talent off the waiver wire. But other than shallower formats, I'm pretty much out on Stanton because I just don't trust him to stay healthy.
I'm going to save my Stanton ranking for later. Normally I would just jump in there with you. I'm going to save it. I'm going to put it in a bag. I'm going to wait for it later.
Ooh, so you're okay. You're even more pessimistic. I like this.
I'm even more pessimistic than you are. So he's higher on my list, but I think everybody should take notice of the guys that we both have. And we didn't, you know, we don't coordinate ahead of time. Mike sent me his list. I did my homework. He did his. We come together to present the group project to you all today here listening to Fantasy Pros. Number seven is a risk that I am taking. It's Jordan Alvarez, number 81 in ADP. And here's my beef with Alvarez, okay? When you're that young and you're having knee issues, it is an absolute risk. No, there's 100% realization that this is potentially a problem. However, I have a long-term memory still. I'm not that old. And I remember watching him a couple years ago just come in and just hit bomb after bomb after bomb and look like one of the most dominant hitters in baseball. He destroyed the minor leagues. He came up, destroyed the big leagues. Not like, oh, he's good. I mean, destroyed. And people will say, well, why do you want to take that risk at utility? And I say, because the potential upside there from that roster spot, Black Book Strategy 101. It's like, be great. Find roster strength. Build your roster core somewhere. And if you're able to get a player who's going to be so much more productive than what most people are going to have in the utility slot, whether it's Nelson Cruz, which, you know, everybody knows too, that somebody had the best tweet today, by the way. It's like, you should find someone who loves you the way Joe loves Nelson Cruz. And you're absolutely right. That is true. But even JD Martinez, I would throw in this mix too. If you're going to hit pitching early, we've done this on a few of the mocks, and if you miss them, you can go back and listen on demand to all the podcasts here and watch them on the YouTube channel at Fantasy Pros MLB. You'll see that whenever we hit pitching early, we pivot right away to these utility guys. And I'm still willing to do that because he's young enough. I know he's a risk. I know the upside too, and the upside is so much that at this ADP, I'm willing to take it, but I'm also going to be very careful in making sure that the guys that I've built in front of him before I take that risk are guys that I believe in. I don't think I want to pair him and Aaron Judge together in the same lineup. That might be a little too much for Joey P to handle. So what are your thoughts on Alvarez? Because I know this player can be a little controversial. I'd love to hear your take on it.
I'm pretty much in lockstep with you, and that makes for boring podcasting, but he's a guy that I think I actually grabbed a share of already.
You and I will never be boring. They will never call us boring. That will never happen, ever.
After listening to this podcast and hearing how awesome Govier was, there's a high standard now, and there's no meeting that energy.
Yes, but then Govier goes back into his tank for 3 weeks, and he comes back out again ready. You know, it takes a lot out of him.
That's true. You know? Meanwhile, I'm known for falling asleep on podcasts. That's how I got the moniker Sleepy K, by the way, for anybody listening. You see my Twitter, it says Sleepy K, that's because I fell asleep podcasting. It's a good story. Well, we can get to it if we have time.
Justin Mason can be very boring, you know. Yeah, I love you, Justin. I'm kidding. You're my best friend.
I mean, you're joking. I'm not. No kidding. When it comes to Justin, yeah, I like Justin, man. I love Justin. Anyway, back to, I guess, what we were talking about, which was
we're talking about Alvarez.
Alvarez, yeah. Gosh, I gotta stay on focused. Right here, Joe.
Right here.
All right, Alvarez. I'm pretty much just with you, man. It's he's such a risk. My only concern is that he came back last year, hit a home run or something like in the game he came back, and then he hurt him. He couldn't even run the bases. Like it looks like it hurts him to run. It looks like it hurts him to move. And he's early 20s. So it's concerning because you're talking about a guy like the name that comes to mind, and I hate this comp. It's not even the same sport, but Greg Oden comes to mind instantly.
Oh God,
It does. That's exactly the comp that comes to mind. Guy that had all the potential in the world.
To take a shot, right? Like this is the year. You're in redraft leagues, you take this shot, you could get a tremendous value. In the keeper dynasty world, it's a totally different discussion. There's no doubt about that. But I feel like if you're going to roll the dice and shoot your shot, this is the year to do it with him.
I think he's going late enough. You can make up for that. Yeah, I think he's going late enough where you could build for it, make up, and still make up for it after. He's a guy that could, if he's healthy, he could be a top 3-round pick next year. I say 3 because if he doesn't gain outfield, being a util-only guy in the top 3 rounds, I think we made that mistake with Chris Davis a couple years ago. Like, it just wasn't a good idea. He was, like, a 5th-round pick or something. So it's like util-only kind of will always keep his value a little lower. But he's the type of guy that can literally win you a league where he's going. So that's why I'll take a couple shots. I'll take a couple shots because that upside is tremendous. We're talking best 4 category producer in fantasy, possibly.
This is an important show. I hope everybody's listening to this realizes it because it's very important to identify risk. It's very important to understand it and account for it. It's not that you can't take it. It's just how you want to build around it. And maybe some you want to avoid and some you can avoid for different reasons. So this is a very important conversation we're having, and I hope everybody applies it to their leagues. Let's do your number 6 here, which is a guy from my Mets. And I think your biggest reason why is probably my biggest reason why, which is playing time when it comes to Dominic Smith.
Exactly. And that's literally all I question. There's pedigree. He came up last year, actually did really well. We know that Dom Smith had his breakout. I love him as a pure hitter, but even in spring training, you've yet to see him in the field. I think Pete Alonso has been locked into first base since the go of spring training, and he's locked into the middle of that lineup. So I know Dom Smith can play some better first base than him, at least from what I'm hearing. You're the Mets fan. You can corroborate that story. But Dom Smith is a guy that, because Pete Alonso kind of blocked him at first, his glove doesn't play well in left field. They have signed Kevin Pillar, Alberto Mora, although they aren't the offensive threat Dominic Smith is. They are the defensive threat. They are better on defense, and Pillar is not a bad hitter either.
No.
So I think we could see late game substitutions to get Dominic Smith off. That cuts into his at bats a little bit. He's not a guy who's going to stand out with flashy power. So if you take away part of the potential for him to compile some of that power, he has a chance to be a little less effective for your fantasy teams. And that's why unless a DH pops up last minute, Dom Smith's just a guy I'm kind of letting other people take, willing to miss out this year, but I'm not really concerned in terms of the actual skill set. It's strictly a playing time concern.
He is one of the guys that the no DH hurt the most. It just did. And he's going to come out in the 7th, 8th, 9th inning sometimes just for defense, which is the right thing to do to win ball games. Mm-hmm. My number 6 is Kevin Biggio, and I feel like I'm on an island here. He's a 60 ADP right now over on Fantasy Pros. And I got to tell you, Mike, I'm not negative about the player, but I just feel like he's got a little bit more risk than people realize. They see the power, the speed, they see all the good things. And I feel like with young players, everybody always wants to see the good, just project the good. And nobody ever wants to kind of recognize, well, he's still a player in development. and he's still a young player. I am more bullish on Vlad this season and Bo Bichette than I am on Kevin Biggio. And I recognize, you know, it also qualifies as a tough position. So I see from your face, I don't know if you really agree with me or you think that I'm completely nuts. So I'm going to just pass the ball to you because you're having, as the kids like to say, all the feels right now as I'm talking about Kevin Biggio. So go ahead, take it from me.
Okay.
You are having all the feels.
Because you sat here and you're sitting here worried about you're worried about like how people are going to react to you. I have him as my number two. I'm jumping my ranks. He's my number two biggest avoid. I'm all out on Biggio in 2021. And it's because not only is he only a three category producer, especially in 5x5, but unless it's OBP, then honestly, OBP justifies his ADP. But if it's not OBP, he becomes he hit 250 with like an expected batting average of 215. He pulls the ball a crazy amount because he tries to generate that power by pulling and putting the ball in the air. When you do that, you're going to end up with a low BABIP, and it's going to be an issue for your batting average. But he's also a compiler. He's a guy that he needs those at-bats because he's not like blazing speed, but he knows how to pick his spot. Biggio is a guy that with Springer in the lineup and Semien, he's the one who got bounced, not Semien. I was hoping that Biggio would stay at the top of the lineup and even bat ahead of Springer, give Springer those RBIs, baby. But no, we're seeing Semien like sit at the top with Springer. Biggio's the one taking the hit. Biggio can hit as low as 6 or 7 because that lineup is like low key, like decent all throughout. So if you're taking away at bats from a guy who I think is a compiler, guy that I would expect 20-20 from in a regular season of him batting at the top of the lineup, does that drop to 15-15? And you're going to give me 15-15, mediocre runs, mediocre RBI in the bottom half of that lineup and hit 230? 240, like that's kind of my concern with Biggio. So I'm really just out on that cost. I can't get behind it.
Well, and I think it's important when two people who have really done the homework here, and look, I know everyone listening does the homework too. And when we're part of their homework, and I respect that and I appreciate that, and we do here at the team. And I everything you said is correct, and you have him higher than I do. I have him at 6, you have him at 2. My number 2 is Stanton.
There you go.
Because you know why? It's like this, you know, abusive relationship where the people just keep going back to it and back to it. And every year the ADP gets more and more tempting. And every year they keep looking for some good to happen, but he's never going to be with you. He's just never going to be there for you. He's not going to bring you flowers on Valentine's Day. He is not going to remember your anniversary. It's just, you need to stop. Okay. You need to stop and move on. And yeah, it's tempting, but it's just when you look and you circle the players and the age and the youth and the upside of the players around that 100 ADP of Stanton, it's the same kind of thing. And I'm glad that you and I agree. And those are two players, obviously, so far that we've overlapped on that. Yes. I think is very important. Now, let's get to the top five here. So your number 5 is somebody that I am careful about taking. There's points where I'm willing to do it because I have enough rotation depth already built to do it. And there's other parts where I'm a little hesitant, and it's Patrick Corbin. So take me through your thoughts on Corbin this year. Obviously last year was the velo did dip, but at the same time, there was the stop and start. He even mentioned that it just didn't work for him. He kind of felt off. So how much you want to buy into his excuse and how much you want to buy into maybe something else being awry?
The issue with Corbin, he's the guy that I think if you completely fade, you're going to miss, like, there's a big chance of missing out. I think he's one of those guys that can literally be like, oh yeah, you forgot about me. Here I am. I'm back. So I'm not going to sit here and completely dismiss him. I just wanted to point out that I'm really scared of his below drop because normally he's a guy that actually, if you actually look at his trends, he ramps up as the season goes, but usually starts at about 90 miles per hour on the fastball. Last year it was like high 80s, and then it took him 2 months to get to the 90s. So maybe he didn't stay in shape during the off season.
Right.
Maybe there are things. He's a guy that you need to monitor in spring training in terms of velo. Because if he's sitting closer to 90 starting off, maybe I'll be a little less concerned. But until I see that, he's at that age too. He's like in his early 30s where pitchers start falling off anyway. So was that the beginning of a fall off? All these questions just that leads to all this risk with him, in my opinion, because there's guys with upside, like a guy like Savale. I'd rather have. I mean, I'm not sure of the ADP, but I love Stroman. I've been before the split change was shown. I was big on Stroman, so guys like that, I'd rather take my shot on. Zach Wheeler's another guy I really like. Chris Paddock has more upside, and I'm just trying to. I honestly don't even know. Corbin's going just behind those guys, so that's not fair. But yeah, Sandy Alcantara. If I want a high floor type, I think I can get that out of Alcantara. I'm looking at Fantasy Pros ADP right now, so those guys going. That's someone going behind them. Savale, again, I mentioned he's going behind them. These are guys I really like, and I think there's more upside with, or at least a similar floor to. And that's why I found myself not getting a lot of Corbin. But again, I recognize that there is risk of missing out, because I think it meant, you mentioned he wasn't right. And the more I'm reading, and I know it's crazy, I can read. The more I'm reading, the more I'm reading, though, there's so many quotes like out there about players just, like Joey Gallo is another one yesterday, was like, yeah, we just weren't right last year.
Martinez said, he goes, yeah, I didn't think we were going to play. I flat out didn't do a damn thing. And you know what? He showed. Because when JD showed up for work, he was like, I don't know. And while looking at it, I was like, when is JD Martinez going to get right? He just, he never did.
He never had the chance.
And I, like you, have not acquired a lot of shares of Corbin yet because of the guys around there. Like, I've taken a lot of Paddock. I've been more aggressive on him this year. But you also hit the nail on the head. I want to reiterate this for people too, because Mike said a lot of smart things there. But the one thing to say is, you know, spring training doesn't mean a whole lot, but for certain guys it does. This is one player it does. If you see Patrick Corbin of old in spring training, I think you can feel good about selecting him. Otherwise, I think you'd be even more skeptical. Speaking of Nationals pitchers, and no, we did not plan this. Number 5, Steven Strasburg, the perennial risk. Number 69, last year was carpal tunnel. The year before, inner ear infection, probably, I don't know. After that, he had that hoof and mouth. I don't know. He's got everything. Everything that could find its way to Steven Strasburg, he will find a way to have it, unfortunately. And yes, this is one of those picks where if you make it and you're right, it could be a league winner for you. So once again, you have to recognize the pitching staff. If you're somehow able to get him as your third starter, awesome. Problem is, I feel like most of the time people are looking at him as a high-end two still. And I think there's just a ton of risk there. And I don't know if I want to take that risk. I think pitching needs to be a priority this year. Young pitchers did not have that inning stamina build that they're normally going to have. That scares the heck out of me. It makes me want to pivot to guys like Corbin and Strasburg, ironically, who have done it before, who have had 200 inning seasons, not a whole lot, obviously, with Steven Strasburg, but still, I think it's something you have to consider and understand that risk, and you can't just wipe the slate clean with him, because like Giancarlo Stanton, there's always somehow period of time that's lost. It's something to strongly consider in head-to-head leagues, but in Roto, I think you can get away with this risk a little bit more than in any head-to-head format, because it's one thing if he misses a month and you get 150 quality innings. It's another thing if he misses a month because you're going to miss the playoffs. That's my feeling about Strasburg. All right, let's go to your number 4, which is a closer, which is the first closer we have on our list today.
Yeah, and I feel like there's like this weird divide with Karinchak. James Karinchak's the guy I have at number 4. Obviously, I'm wildly pessimistic to have him this low on my list. And I'm sure no one's used the word. Usually it's optimistic. No, I'm being pessimistic with Karinchak. It's not about the skill set. It's about, like, I'm literally going, maybe I'm going a little too deep overthinking this, but he's about to be entering arbitration. The Dolans like try to be cheap. And Karinchak's a guy that if you take the closer role away from him, he becomes way more affordable in arbitration. You can keep the price down. But also he's a guy that didn't exactly limit hard contact. He was a guy that gave up like 60-something percentile hard contact for pitchers. His walk rate was actually kind of high. And they have Emmanuel Clase. I think, like, because it's the Indians, I have this weird, like, I'm holding on to the idea of Nick Wittgren being the closer. Like, that's the guy in my head who's going to be closing games for them. I know it's not a common thought.
You bring up I love when people bring up baseball-related business points, because it does enter into a lot more decisions than people realize.
Especially the Indians.
Especially a team like the Indians. You're 100% right. All right, my number 4 here on this list is Pete Alonso. Yes, my Pete Alonso, my New York Mets. And I'm not trying to denigrate this player in any way. I love Pete Alonso. He is great. He is a great human being. He is a very good baseball player. I think that people are bidding on him this year as the player he was when he hit 50 home runs, which I always said that is going to be an outlier and an anomaly. If you go back in the track record of him in the minor leagues, he was actually a better hitter. He has sacrificed a lot, and he did it at the end of that season to get the record, where he sacrificed a lot of contact and some of the pitch recognition skills that he was known for in the minor leagues. He was a better hitter than he was a power hitter in the minor leagues at times. And then he had this record chase, and it was important. The fan base loved it. He thought it was important, and I give him a lot of credit for chasing it. And I feel like ever since, he's added a lot more swing and miss. He's been a little bit more home run happy than he has been the good Pete Alonso hitter. And I feel like everybody's bidding on the rookie season and not taking enough into account of the downside there of the compromise he's had. I would rather him hit 35 home runs with a 260 batting average, honestly, than hit, you know, 45 home runs with a 220 batting average. I just think that's my problem. That's where I kind of, I struggle with him, and the ADP for him right now is at 51. So he's got to kind of be the guy who does both almost at that level. Mm. So that's my feeling on Pete Alonso. Any thoughts on that real quick?
I'm kind of with you. I won't draft him at his ADP because not only, and if he is signing off for power, just go get Matt Olson 30 picks later. It's the same skill set. Yeah.
How different that is 100% true. And that is something that I find myself doing in drafts where I see Alonso there and I go, well, I can have Olson, and then I get Olson, like you said, 30 picks later. And it's the same. It's almost the same guy. It's just there's such an East Coast bias when it comes to baseball. And a lot of East Coast people don't see those West Coast guys.
And then the Mets also throw in a humidor randomly last year. And no one talks about it. Like it's still sitting there. I don't know how much it hurts the ball, helps the ball, but you guys have one. And like, I don't know what to think.
I have one. I have a humidor too. I do like the occasional cigar. So anyone listening to the show loves Fantasy Pros. We win you a lot of money. You can absolutely send me a box of cigars. I'll be very happy. I look like a cigar kind of guy, right? Like, you know, like I can say things.
It's more like a pack of marbles in a weird seat corner. Like, that's what I get. Oh, sorry. I apologize. You're the host. I shouldn't be saying that. I apologize. Yes, totally cigar guy. Sophisticated. Whiskey and all.
Yeah, whatever, Curlin. All right, let's get to the top three here. Your top three is a pitcher. For the San Diego Padres, it's Nelson Lamet. So take me through your thoughts on him.
It's low-hanging fruit, and there's a reason why it's low-hanging fruit. It's easy for the picking, and Lamet's just a guy that I don't buy the health. I mean, he's not healthy now. He's ramping up. We're 3 weeks away from baseball, and he might get, what, one or two starts in at this point? Maybe? And that could lead to him starting off on the IL. And we're talking about a guy who got shut down and couldn't even pitch in the playoffs, and they actually went pretty deep into the playoffs. And I believe, I'm trying to remember where I heard it. I wish I can give credit where credit's due. But I remember overhearing somebody mentioning that, I guess there was something now that if he kept pitching last year, Lamet that is, he would have honestly needed a second Tommy John. Like, if had he tried pitching through the injury. So I can't. And now you're talking about a guy that you're hoping to get an increase in innings where he's never really had, like, that workload. Six-man rotation potential there. Gore coming up, ready to contribute, hopefully. Yeah. He's only a two pitch pitcher still. So if he loses any effectiveness on that slider / whatever that awesome pitch, it's arguably the best pitch in baseball. But that's what helps his fastball play up. But if hitters start staying away from the breaking stuff and just sit on the fastball, we can also see that adjustment happen. I think there's just so much risk there, and I'm willing, again, another guy I'm just willing to be wrong on, but unlike a lot of these guys on my list, he's somebody I'm not drafting. He's off my board, and for me to say that. I usually don't put that tag because I feel like everybody has a draft price, but there is just so many question marks and risk in terms of health and production. Lamet just becomes a guy that I'm completely just off of.
I'm completely off of Randy Arozarena. I know it was magic last year. I get it. That was a wonderful run of the playoffs, a great finish.
Beautiful.
Season. It was. It was beautiful. And I like his swing, actually. I think he's actually, oddly enough, has one of the more level planes of a swing, which is actually kind of a throwback. And it's why he was so tough to get out last year. And I understand by the time he got to the World Series, it bottomed out. But that's baseball. It's a game of streaks. There's highs and lows. I just haven't seen enough yet where I'm going to buy in to the ADP of 59. And I'm okay with being wrong here. You know, I think you have to understand that, too. You have to get to a point with certain players where you're just like, I'm at peace with being wrong with this guy on somebody else's team. So be it. And I'm at peace right now because at 59, it's just too much. There's too many good outfielders around that same area. There's too many good outfielders later for me. And I do agree that, and I'm a firm believer that outfield is a priority, especially in those five outfielder leagues. You got to hit it early and often. But I just can't get there with the Arozarena. And I know some people love him. He's probably one of the biggest lightning rods possibly that exists. Do you have thoughts on Arozarena? I don't know if you and I have ever talked about him. So he's not on your list, but is he somebody that you feel comfortable at 59 drafting?
No, but I feel like you're either in or you're either out. Yeah. Like he's at the ADP. Arozarena's at the ADP where you're in or you're out, man.
The ADP is telling us more people are in. And I haven't talked to one smart person this year who is in.
Maybe we're not smart people. I mean,
we're the smartest. We're definitely
I've talked to a few people that are actually very much in on them. And I think it's because I think the ADP is being affected by the high stakes area. Because
that
a lot,
is true.
I think because if you talk, to guys like Dave McDonald, he's very, very big on Arozarena. I know Zach from Draft Champagne podcast is very big on him. And you know, so the trend there is a lot of guys that like him are high stakes. I think James Anderson's in on him too. And James Anderson's a great player. And I think a lot of it is because he offers that potential to be league winning or it's hard to say league winning, but he offers that potential at the overall. And I think because we've been drafting in NFBC, that's like the first set of ADP you get. And I think that's heavily influenced the market going forward.
Guys,
yeah. So you have like, and that's why he's, although he's not on my list, he's a guy I typically stray away from because there's a guy on the same team in Austin Meadows that I like more than him. I rank higher than Arozarena, and you can get him 30 picks later. So yeah. although I don't think Meadows will steal as much bases, I think the stolen bases, the potential for that with Arozarena is what's really pushing him up. The five category production potential pushes him up. But there are people that are super high on him, but it's usually, again, a lot of it's the high stakes guys. And that's fine. And they're smart players. They're some of the best players, you know? So sometimes it makes me question myself, but I'm going to trust my process here.
They are so good that they're also the people that you know they're going to dig deep enough to find the other guys. And people listening to the show, you should know what kind of player you are. If you're more of a casual fun player and you're listening to this pod just to get ready for your stuff, you might not be able to get the pulls in round 17, 18, 19 that they get. So you might not want to get to the Arozarena and be in that business. Or maybe if you're in a very shallow league, like a 10-team league.
Take a shot.
I think that's where you could take that shot on the ADP, because if you're wrong, the replacement value is much more readily available.
Yes.
Three outfielder league, much easier to be aggressive and take the shot.
I'm glad you said that. I'm so glad you said that because I think we often get caught up, we as an industry, we as a whole, get caught up in talking certain formats, usually deeper formats because that's what we play in. But if you actually talk about shallow leagues, a lot of these guys I'm way more likely to roster because of the replacement level off the waiver wire.
Alonzo is a key guy there that I would circle. I'm way more interested in Alonzo there. I'll just take whatever power I get because maybe he does have that 50 upside. Arozarena's another guy. You know, it's funny. People will say, well, why do you want to take the shots? You take the shots in the 10-teamer because it's harder to separate. And the good news is if you fail, it's easier waiver to wire. Replace. Exactly.
Dude, last year you could have had Trent Grisham in 10-teamers. Heck, there was 12-teamers. Because I play home leagues with our 12-team and relatively deep. But Grisham was a free agent. Kyle Lewis is a free agent. You see where I'm going with this? Like, and that's a 12-teamer. So 10s, you're having guys that are like guys that we love just outside top 200 in your free agent pool. And I'd rather take my shots, shoot for all upside, knowing good and well I'll be able to find a good name or two off the waiver wire for sure.
All right. Now, we both did our number twos already. Mine was Stanton. His was Biggio. Mm-hmm. They both made our list, respectively, which brings us to our number ones. And I know Mike doesn't know mine. I do know his. So let's talk about your number one, your riskiest pick in 2021 in the top 150. Mike, who is the name?
I feel so bad for Yancey because I know he's going to listen to this podcast. And Yancey, he hears me dunk on this guy as often as possible. And I'm going to do it again. It's Alberto Mondesi of the Kansas City Royals. And I even wrote all my notes say on him is staying on brand because I actually listened. I listened to my very first ever podcast I put out, which I would never recommend doing. It is just I can hear the nerve.
I could find mine.
I'm still relatively new, and I there was a lot of things about that podcast I didn't like, but one thing I literally laughed out loud when I listened to, I faded Alberto Mondesi back in 2019, and every year since, and it's just I can't get behind it. I understand the potential, but that's the thing. It's frustrating because last year he was a big fade of mine as well. I was right for 6 weeks. I was wrong for three, and those 3 weeks are carrying way more weight than the other two thirds of the season when it comes to Mondesi. And he is that streaky. And in Roto, yes, you are looking for the overall like production, but the problem is I think there's so much volatility in that profile. The lows are going to come. You know the lows are going to be there. But what if the highs don't stay sustained long enough to outweigh the lows? So now he doesn't hit those projections. He doesn't, and if you're drafting him, you're banking on the stolen bases. And if he has had injury issues in the past, soft tissues, groins, etc. It's just Mondesi's a guy that I feel is very, very volatile in terms of health, in terms of production. And I don't like building my team around that. You can build to take on a Mondesi. I know, and I hate to say people don't say that enough. Even I'm guilty of not putting it out there. You can build around a Mondesi. I just won't. I think there's way too much, and I think it limits your risk, your ability to take on risk in the middle to later rounds, because you don't want to take on risk early, middle, and late, because then you have there's a lot more bust potential in your overall roster construction. So you got to pick your spots where you're taking risk, and for me, it's just too early to take on that volatility. And on top of that, one last key thing is that he was supposed to bat like top two, top three in the lineup. After they acquired Benintendi, again, and we haven't even seen Mondesi play yet because he fouled the ball off his foot. We haven't heard anything about it. We just found out, like, after game three, oh, by the way, he's missing time because we're not going to rush him back because he hurt himself. but it's still lingering. We're talking about game six of spring training. He still hasn't been out there. At least I haven't checked today's lineups yet. So five games through, he hasn't been out there. But on top of that, where does he hit in the lineup? I expect him to get some reps early on hitting the top of the lineup, but the Royals have been a team that showed their hand, so to speak, in a sense, because they've shown it's been Witt, Merrifield leading off, Benintendi batting second, and then a mix. I think it's Carlos Santana, Salvador Perez, and then Soler. Yes, thank you. So it's been those five. I got on screen. Those five have been on like in the top five consistently so far. I don't know if Mondesi is going to bump Benintendi. In my opinion, I don't think he does. So now you're looking at Mondesi as what, a 6 or 7 hole hitter. Ideally, he might even be a 9 hole because of his skill set. It's like a double leadoff. You know, you get him in the 9 spot. And that really kills him, in my opinion. So there's just so many question marks. I'm really, again, there's no cautious pessimism. I'm full-blown pessimistic on Mondesi's potential. And it's just staying on brand, man. I'm rambling at this point when it comes to Mondesi, but I just want to drive the point home of this is my hill. I get it. I've been wrong though.
No, everybody. Here's the thing.
My
job is to be incredibly informative to folks. And if we are doing our job, most of the time that information that we're giving, that we're using, is going to lead people to success. That information is not infallible. There's always going to be.
But one year I don't learn my lesson.
I wrote something, and this is a true story, and nobody ever talks about the failures of analysts, right? I'm going to talk about one of my favorite ones because it's hilarious. One year I did a write-up on Dallas Keuchel. He's a good blah, 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 middle of the rotation guy. I'm just not feeling it. All these reasons, blah, blah. It's not like he's going to win a Cy Young or anything.
Don't tell me.
Won the Cy Young that year.
That year?
So we all have these pitfalls. But once again, yes.
I'm consistent with this one.
90% of the time, that's fine. Now, you mentioned about dunking on Mondesi here. Now, one of my favorite kind of dunks is the alley-oop, where someone
yes!
it and then dunk it. Because guess who my number one is? It's also Adalberto Mondesi. Oh my goodness. And this was not planned ahead of time. This
I'm so beautiful. Excited.
Yancey, put your earmuffs on, my friend. But look, everything Mike said, I don't want to go back over it because everything he said is correct. We're looking so much on the, yes, look how he finished. It was so great. It was so strong at the end. And let's take that and extrapolate it over the entire season. And it's all going to be good. No, there's a lot of bad. And I like Mondesi. He's a fun player. I can't wrap my mind around this. And I wonder too, because he's on this list. Biggio's on this list. I wonder if there's also something about the children of great major leaguers that, you know, we're familiar with the names, we're familiar, and we kind of mix the success in our minds. They're two different people playing in two different eras of baseball. Mondesi certainly has upside. I understand the stolen bases make him very coveted, but like Mike's saying, you have to have a plan. And what is that plan? You have to be very careful of how you do this. And you have to account for what could be a massive downside. And I don't think enough people are doing that. So there you have it. Both of our number ones. And look, he's number 34 overall. So that just tells you, like, you're in or you're out. Mike is out. I'm out. If you're in a shorter league, though, 10-team league.
I'm still out. I'm just committing. I'm committing.
Taking the risk. I don't want to do it. Not in the third round. Not for me. It's not where I want to be. Not in the second round either. And he doesn't make it to the fourth. So it's just, that's it. There's always going to be at least one person in your league that's going to bite on that and go for Mondesi. So there you have it. Fascinating that, you know, your number two and my number two was an overlap, or I say we both had overlaps and they were the respective like twos. And then our number ones were the same. So that should tell everybody a lot right now. All right. Great stuff here, Mike. Let's go and be the People's Podcast for a moment and go into the mailbag. Kevin Mitchell at let's see, the SPUS21 says, in an ESPN 10-team roto league with a max 1,200 innings per roster, is there an optimal pitching strategy for this league? I've been using the Draft Wizard. Thank you very much over here, Fantasy Pros, for using the Draft Wizard to mock for this league settings. And I've scored highest on the, quote, Marmol strategy, which is, for those of you who are, I just heard about this yesterday, what this is, which is going for hitters and then taking high leverage relievers after that. So like 10 rounds of hitters and then trying to win saves and figuring out that way and kind of fading pitchers because of the innings. Now, and he's also says, Kevin says, love you, Joey P. I love you right back, Kevin. All the love has been great on the show today. Kevin, I appreciate you listening. I'm not one to go for this kind of approach, but if you're in a 10-team league, we just talked about the replacement value. is that something that's more viable where you just load up on hitting and then the high leverage relievers and try to find that? I just feel like there's a lot less high leverage relievers than there used to be. That's my problem with this approach. What do you think about it?
I think the good high leverage relievers are even being drafted high. So it's like, you're going to have to reach for like some of the better ones, the Devin Williams of the world, the Nick Andersons. There are good guys not being, you know, drafted as highly, you know, Ottavino, if you think he's going to bounce back, sure, stuff like that. But I don't know. It's just not my style. It never has been, regardless of format. It's more viable in a 10 teamer. If you're going to try it, I think it's a fun thing. You should definitely give it a shot. It can't hurt, but play two leagues, play three. Like,
of a big time money league for 10. I would not do that.
Yes. And that's the thing.
I'm trying to drill home, and maybe you feel this way too, Mike, is this year with all the uncertainty of pitching, I am going a little bit more veteran heavy. I just did it in TGFBI. I got Kershaw, I got Morton, I got Greinke, I got guys like that on my staff. I also got Gallen, but I've got guys that I know can pitch a full season of baseball. I've seen it before. And even in the shorter, you know, 10 team leagues, I think it's something to consider a little bit. And I think people should at least kind of, if you're going to have a lean towards the old farts for once.
Or guys like I'm big on, I can't get enough of Aaron Savale going back to last year.
No, you know, what's funny? Me neither. I'm a big Savale. And you know what? I play a lot of DFS.
It's an Indians thing. Chairs.
It's an Indians thing. They do a really good job of bringing these young pitchers through. And when they pop, oh my goodness, they're good. Let's do another one here. Adam Harbor at Adam T. Harbor wants to know, what categories do you recommend for a head-to-head categories league? So you playing a lot of head-to-head cats or what?
Not a lot, but it depends. It's always, these are loaded questions. I'm going to think more for like a begin. Well, because
you think you're going to get easy ones? Come on.
Yeah. The problem is it's a very simple question, but it can get complicated because it depends on your level of comfort, of level of, I guess, experience in leagues. Because I like to play in wacky, like K per nine and stuff like that, because it adds a little challenge. But I think it's always good to keep it simple, especially if you're newer, especially if you're playing with a bunch of guys who are kind of newer. You can go traditional 5x5, but maybe if you want to change it up or spice things up, change out batting average for OBP. That's kind of the way things are going anyway. It adds different strategy to players. It also adds different values. It changes guys like Mondesi. It actually makes Harper like a first-round pick, slam dunk first-round pick, in my opinion. So stuff like that. And maybe go quality. This is where I struggle with the pitching side, because I still think wins are fun, but they are terribly inconsistent and very random. But quality starts are really difficult. So I'm almost like, should we combine quality starts plus wins instead of saves plus holds? Everyone wants to do saves plus holds. I think quality starts plus wins might be a good way to go, because it helps you value pitching, good pitching that can go deep into games while still keeping that randomness of wins. I don't know, but I think you can't go wrong with 5x5 in terms of categories, in terms of head-to-head category formats. But
yeah, look,
I'm into the wacky stuff. I like the fun stuff. I like making it a little challenging and fun.
To me, just make it, if you're going head-to-head, make a point so everything counts and structure it that way. And I've got the system in the black book that I think works the best for head-to-head points. But like, I've laid it out there for folks if they want to steal it, which is, you know, it's there for the taking. But see, that's the thing. Like, once you go head-to-head, do points so you don't have to ask yourself this question. So you value everything. Value triples. Value batter strikeouts. Value, you know, like as negatives. So you're like, let's make it like baseball. And then you could tailor it. And, you know, let's knock saves down. Let's make wins worth more because they're harder to get and saves aren't. That's what I hate about Roto, is that saves are as important as a win. And you get five innings for that and one inning for the other. And they're somehow the most valuable. It's like stolen bases. That's why Roto drives me crazy. But I'm the anomaly. I know I'm that
guy. I was going to say, I actually have to disagree finally. I love Roto because the thing about Roto is it's all encompassing. It keeps you starting from, I mean, don't get me wrong, with Roto, the problem with Roto, I guess, people do check out a little early. They can. They just do because, oh, my team's done by May. No, not if you're an active owner, not if you're active in trades. You can turn a team around in May or June still. I've done it. It just depends on your willingness to commit. But I think it does give you the best idea of an all-encompassing manager, you know, because
what? Let me throw a wrench in there. You know what I did a couple years ago? We turned our points league, my home points league, 16 teams, into an all-play. Everybody plays everybody every week. And that is like the greatest balance, because it's head to head every week. You're setting lineups every week. And if you're doing well consistently, it's being rewarded over the long term, kind of like season long 5x5 does in a way. So it's almost like the best of both. But then you get that fun 2 week head to head playoff matchups that we do 2 weeks at a clip.
I hate playoff. You know what it is football has just left a bad taste in my mouth all these years, because I've honestly cut out industry leagues with football. I focus strictly on home leagues, and every year I can have the best team in my home league and lose in the first round. And I know 2 week playoffs are actually the way to go in general these days. But man, it's so aggravating. I hate the head-to-head because I think there's just that added. It's fun. It is fun because there's an added element of luck that like sports really brings. Like the Rays making the World Series and almost like winning it. Like that's not that that was lucky, but like that element of surprise is what I was looking for. Is the word I'm looking for, and I think head-to-head brings that. But I do like rewarding what I feel like is the best manager at the end of the year. I think Roto has a better job of doing that. But again, I'm not anti.
You give out best when we do this. We do
a bonus best regular season.
There's ways to do it. All right.
I agree.
We're running out of time.
Sorry.
Here. Let's play some game. No, it's good. This is good conversation, man. This is important. And I'm sure everybody's loving it. So let's play a little game. Let's do a little what's trending. I'm going to pull some things off Twitter. What's trending right now? Turn them somehow into baseball related things or fantasy related things. So buckle up, keep it clean, and let's see how this goes. All right. Coming to America sequel drops this weekend. Actually today on Amazon Prime as we're recording this, which I'm very excited about. Huge fan of this movie. I probably watched this movie at least once a month when I was in college every month. Which player's great 2020 MLB season will not live up to the sequel though in 2021? I'll say Randy Arozarena because I'm just, I'm going to stay on my brand there and just say, it's not going to live up to the hype. Do you have one too? Maybe yours is Mondesi, although most of Mondesi's season wasn't great. So I don't even know if that's a good one. So who's not going to be a good sequel this year?
Man, is it too early to say, or too late to say Framber Valdez?
I think it might be.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and I don't know if I truly believe this, but I think the one that's most likely to kind of disappoint is going to be Zach Plesac. I have my concerns in terms of, I'm very big on Indians pitching. I love it. But I think you're paying the premium, and he only showed it over a short period of time against subpar opponents. So although I think Plesac has the skill set to be a very good pitcher, I just need to see, again, it goes back to needing to see more, like you mentioned with Arozarena. And that's where I'm at with Plesac. So I think Plesac is one of the names that just pops out as a guy that there's a lot of potential there to just disappoint coming off such a great season. So that's going to be the guy I pick. But again, I'm not fading him fully. I'm just hedging my bet and not getting a ton of shares of him. It's a cop out. I get that. Someone's listening like, oh, that's a cop out. You're damn right. No, it is.
I think it's valid. All right. Last one here. Yesterday, sadly, was the 27 year anniversary, which makes me feel super old, of John Candy's passing. One of my favorite actors, great comedic actor, great actor, period. So I'm going to turn this into a question, but before I even do you have a favorite John Candy movie? Is it Planes, Trains, and Automobiles? Is it his cameo in Home Alone, Summer Rental? I mean, the list goes on and on. He was in the Blues Brothers. He's been in everything. You got a favorite John Candy movie potentially? Because, I mean, I'm sure Uncle Buck is one that
I was going to say Uncle Buck comes to mind right away.
You seem like an Uncle Buck kind of guy. I feel like Uncle Buck
as soon as you ask that and Cool Runnings.
I was going to say, and Cool Runnings is the other one. If you're a sports person, you probably love
Cool Runnings instantly comes to mind. How do you not do Cool Runnings? Like, and it's a movie I've watched. It has good, I can rewatch that one. It's something I've enjoyed. So those are the two that come to mind right away.
All right. So here's the real baseball question.
Oh, goodness.
Candy is sweet. Who's got the sweetest swing in Major League Baseball?
Oh, man, I know I'm going to forget. Do you have an answer? Because
Well, look, the sweetest swing I ever saw will always be Ken Griffey Jr.
Yes, like, there's no denying that.
Like, nowadays, I feel like everybody's in a cookie cutter, and there's not enough of, I don't know, you see a lot less individuality because everybody kind of gets that drilled out of them. So it's actually harder to find guys that have that. I do like Tatis. He is certainly fun.
That was the name
that comes to me. So that's kind of where I go now. But
I do like Acuna. Something about Acuna, like when he just gets a hold of a ball, it just looks different, yeah, feels Acuna different. I like that. And Tatis has it. It's just that swag
too. I was like Harper. Harper's got that great finish.
That's the thing about Harper is like I tend to say Harper, but then it's so aggressive. It doesn't have that smooth feel to it. It's like an aggressive swing.
I kind of like that.
It's
like a violent, quick swing, but the finish is so pretty, which I love. Like he gets his hands through so quick.
No, I know, but it's just so hard because, again, like you said, I'm always comping it to the likes of a Griffey or even Bonds, who just had that smooth power swing that was just so easy for him.
Like flick a wrist. It was just
that's what comes to mind when I think of like a smooth swing. So I'm over here like going through the ADP looking for guys that just stand out, but I think we mentioned like some of the better names, man, for sure.
All right, I want to remind everybody again. Our big Fantasy Baseball Fest coming up next Friday on March 12th. Go to our YouTube channel, Fantasy Pros MLB. Again, it's specific for MLB. Fantasy Pros MLB over on YouTube. Subscribe, click the notifications button. The live stream is going to be from 12 to 4. We've got great guests, amazing people, 4 hours of nonstop wall-to-wall baseball hosted by yours truly and Dan Harris. Also reminding everybody too, you got that Juan Soto jersey. His swing's pretty sweet also. FantasyPros.com/MLB contest. Again, that's FantasyPros.com/MLB contest. Thanks to our friends at PristineAuction.com. Get in there, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or CastBox. Take that screenshot, go over there, fill out the form, and enter the contest to win. And again, you can follow our friend here, Mike Kurland, on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. That's Kurland with a K. He's host of the Bases Loaded pod and contributes to Roto Baller, MLB, and Prospects Live. Mike, I hope you had fun, man. This was a great conversation, and I think everybody is smarter for having spent a nice hour together.
I know. I can't thank you enough for the opportunity. Thanks for having me on, and it really was a good time.
Awesome stuff, man. All right, that'll do it for me and Mike, but the story of the game goes on. That's it for us. We'll see you next time, kids.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Pros MLB and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Fantasy Pros MLB.